Up From Slavery by Booker T. Washington. Preface. This volume is the outgrowth of a series of articles dealing with incidents in my life, which were published consecutively in the Outlook. While they were appearing in that magazine, I was constantly surprised at the number of requests which came to me from all parts of the country, asking that the articles be permanently preserved in book form. I am most grateful to the Outlook for permission to gratify these requests. I have tried to tell a simple, straightforward story, with no attempt at embellishment. My regret is that what I have attempted to do has been done so imperfectly. The greater part of my time and strength is required for the executive work connected with the Tuskegee Normal and Industrial Institute, and in securing the money necessary for the support of the institution. Much of what I have said has been written on board trains, or at hotels or railroad stations, while I have been waiting for trains, or during the moments that I could spare from my work while at Tuskegee. Without the painstaking and generous assistance of Mr. Max Bennett Thrasher, I could not have succeeded in any satisfactory degree. Introduction. The details of Mr. Washington's early life, as frankly set down in Up From Slavery, did not give quite a whole view of his education. He had the training that a colored youth receives at Hampton, which, indeed, the autobiography does explain. But the reader does not get his intellectual pedigree, for Mr. Washington himself, perhaps, does not as clearly understand it as another man might. The truth is, he had a training during the most impressionable period of his life that was very extraordinary, such a training as few men of his generation have had. To see its full meaning, one must start in the Hawaiian Islands half a century or more ago. Footnote. For this interesting view of Mr. Washington's education, I am indebted to Robert C. Ogden, Esquire, Chairman of the Board of Trustees of Hampton Institute, and the intimate friend of General Armstrong during the whole period of his educational work. There Samuel Armstrong, a man of missionary parents, earned enough money to pay his expenses at an American college. Equipped with this small sum and the earnestness that the undertaking implied, he came to Williams College when Dr. Mark Hopkins was president. Williams College had many good things for youth in that day, as it has in this, but the greatest was the strong personality of its famous president. Every student does not profit by a great teacher, but perhaps no young man ever came under the influence of Dr. Hopkins, whose whole nature was so ripe for profit by such an experience as young Armstrong. He lived in the family of President Hopkins, and thus had a training that was wholly out of the common. And this training had much to do with the development of his own strong character, whose originality and force we are only beginning to appreciate. In turn, Samuel Armstrong, the founder of Hampton Institute, took up his work as a trainer of youth. He had very raw material, and doubtless most of his pupils failed to get the greatest lessons from him. But as he had been a peculiarly receptive pupil of Dr. Hopkins, so Booker Washington became a peculiarly receptive pupil of his. To the formation of Mr. Washington's character, then, went the missionary zeal of New England, influenced by one of the strongest personalities in modern education, and the wide-reaching moral earnestness of General Armstrong himself. These influences are easily recognizable in Mr. Washington today by men who knew Dr. Hopkins and General Armstrong. I get the cue to Mr. Washington's character from a very simple incident many years ago. I had never seen him, and I knew little about him, except that he was the head of a school at Tuskegee, Alabama. I had occasion to write to him, and I addressed him as the Reverend Booker T. Washington. In his reply, there was no mention of my addressing him as a clergyman. But when I had occasion to write him again and persisted in making him a preacher, his second letter brought a postscript. I have no claim to Reverend. I knew most of the colored men who at that time had become prominent as leaders of their race, but I had not then known one who was neither a politician nor a preacher. And I had not heard of the head of an important colored school who was not a preacher. A new kind of man in the colored world, I said to myself, a new kind of man, surely, if he looks upon his task as an economic one instead of a theological one.